Welcome to Vinyl Verdict. I'm Bell.
I'm Jamie.
I'm Plouf.
And this week it's my pick, Songs of Innocence by U2. And I can tell you right now, my mom is going crazy because she loves U2.
Oh, no way.
But I'm not sure where to start because it's such a legendary band. It's been around since 1976.
Yeah, they formed in like high school or something, right?
Yeah, they were teenagers. But U2 is an Irish rock band made up of Bono, The Edge, Adam Clayton, and Larry Mullen Jr. There's no cool names.
Yeah, they don't get cool.
For those two, no mononyms.
The Edge.
Yeah, or just Edge. He wanted a mononym as well, not a duodenum.
Oh.
Is that a dual mononym?
The Edge is part of that documentary, It Might Get Loud.
Yeah.
He's the one that's the most out of place.
And he's the only guy who I'm like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
it was a great documentary. It was pretty fun. But the whole time, I'm like, who the hell is The Edge? I'm not even joking. I asked my dad that mid-documentary because he also loves U2. And he's like, he's from U2. And I was like, oh, okay, cool.
You know what? I feel like throwing back to a couple episodes ago, Adam Clayton and Larry Mullen Jr. give me major Chad Smith vibes. Like Bono and The Edge do so much together and they're such a legendary duo.
Yeah.
And there's just two others.
They were the guys who were, you know, in high school with them.
Yeah, they just happened to be the right place at the right time, I guess. No disrespect to their talent because they are, I assume, good at what they do.
Yeah, they've been doing it for a long time now.
The drums are very prominent in their work, which is cool. Anyways, I'm not actually the biggest U2 fan in the world, but I grew up listening to them a lot because my mom is a big fan. And generally, I'd say I enjoy their music. Like, I think if you played me every single U2 song, I'd I'd actively enjoy like 65%.
Dang.
The other 35% I would say is aggressively fine. It is very, like their new stuff is very pop rock. And it's just a bit too much for me. It kind of gives like new Coldplay vibes or like Coldplay after the second album vibes, where it's just like the same aggressively pop rock, bland, beige music.
Middle of the road, baby.
I don't even like to call it pop rock. I like to call it soft rock.
Yeah, it's sort of soft rocky, sure. Yeah. But it's not yacht rocky.
Sure.
No.
Yeah.
The band formed when they were all teenagers in school together. And within 4 years, they'd signed a record deal and released their first album, Boy, in 1980.
It's impressive.
Yeah. Truly, it's pretty crazy how they were able to go right off the bat. Because right away, in like their second or third album, they released Sunday Bloody Sunday, which is like their most legendary song of all time.
Sure.
U2 has a lot of hit songs. They're actually one of the best-selling musical artists in history. And their fifth album, Joshua Tree, was one of the best-selling albums in the U.S. of all time. And they're the second highest-grossing musical act from 1980 to 2022, when they earned $2.1 billion in revenue.
They're still touring. My dad is probably going to go see them in Vegas at the Sphere.
My mom just saw them in Vegas at the Sphere.
No way.
And she said it
crazy.
Was unreal.
Yeah.
I'm very jealous. I would love to see that. With how legendary their early albums are, it's fair to ask why I chose Songs of Innocence. And I chose it because it's maybe the album that you own by U2.
It's infamous.
Because this was released on September 9th, 2014, which if you don't remember, for some reason, was an Apple event day.
Wow.
Yeah, Bono went on stage and announced with Tim Cook that everybody that used or had iTunes would get the album for free.
Yeah, Apple paid through the absolute nose for it.
I bet. They performed a concert at the event,
then
released this album. And I just got to say, that Apple event was a banger. They announced the iPhone 6, which was a major change, Apple Pay, and the Apple Watch. Crazy. That's a stacked event.
People were very upset.
They were furious because the album actually automatically downloaded to a lot of people's phones.
Yeah.
So like all of a sudden,
if you owned a 16 gig phone, it downloaded uncompressed audio.
Mm-hmm. Didn't it go straight to your iTunes library as well?
It did. It added it immediately.
And then if you didn't turn off automatic downloads, because I think it was an automatic on switch, like it just came on, it was downloaded to your devices.
Yeah. And I believe when you updated to iOS, whatever the heck it was, 9, it came down as part of the download.
Yeah. So people were not happy, especially because the album art, which we'll talk about later, is like a guy hugging another shirtless guy. So it's like
just
odd.
Kind of weird, yeah.
And if your like grandpa had that picture on his phone all of a sudden, he would not be happy.
No.
Sure. And there wasn't a clear way to remove it. They actually had to release a tool to like remove it from people's iTunes libraries because
Wait, they released a tool album instead? Whoa, even worse.
That would have been sick.
So very, very interesting. And then it also had the same effect as In Rainbows by Radiohead, where other artists weren't happy because they're like, if you can give away music for free, you devalue the music of other people's work, which is the same thing people said about In Rainbows because it was by donation.
A couple of reviews of this album also said that this album feels cheap because it's free.
which is stupid.
I think it feels cheap because it sucks.
It was huge. The controversy was giant. If you haven't heard of it, people as in like articles and news writers call it like one of the biggest musical gaffes in history.
It was a big deal.
I think the most damning thing wasn't that they downloaded it. It was part of the event and all that. It was that they worked with U2 on this new audio visual thing in iTunes. It was like an audio visual project, and it went absolutely nowhere. It was supposed to be this new thing where like every song had a music video attached to it, sort of like how sometimes Spotify has like a thing. And everything, like they shot a bunch of short films for this thing, and it went nowhere. This is the only album that Apple did anything related to that with.
Yeah, Apple's like, we should give up on music after that.
I think they spent $240 million on
this. Oh, my God.
Shout out to YouTube for getting the bag, I guess.
Yeah, the bag, but like...
Respect.
But my biggest thing was that no one who was going out to buy an iPhone in 2014 remotely cared about U2, or not very many of them.
Yeah, it would have been... I mean, even though they're such a huge band, a lot of people have iPhones.
Like, how many of them are U2 fans, right?
Or MacBooks, or people who just buy music and movies. Also, remember, podcasts and that term was invented by Apple. So, like, if you just listened to podcasts back in the day, you were probably using iTunes.
Sure.
So, like, all of a sudden, you have this in your library. I was talking to a coworker, and they're like, still, when I connect to CarPlay, the first thing that plays is U2, because it plays from my Apple Music library.
Wow.
And I don't use Apple Music, so it plays this U2 album. Like, it's crazy. They should have just made it free and, like, the track downloads or whatever, and you can just go and download it from the store before sound device was a mistake.
My Apple Music Rewind is broken because whenever I plug my phone into my car, it plays whatever the first track is, and ABBA is the first band in my liked albums. Because I liked an ABBA album. So it said ABBA was my number one artist.
You don't have to cover up. We know you like ABBA.
I like ABBA, but it wasn't my number one artist. It's just like, okay, cool. It's because it starts with A.
Yeah. You also have to think, in 2014, like, everybody had phones, but not everyone was technically literate.
Sure.
So this idea that a company could force something onto your phone was probably weird.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they flicked a switch, and now I have this thing on my phone.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
So... yeah, what do you guys think about U2? Like I said, I wasn't a huge fan. Like, I mean, I'd listen to them, I enjoyed them, but I wouldn't say
I like 80s U2. Joshua Tree, Boy.
Joshua Tree is legit very good.
Yeah, Joshua Tree is a great album. I think my own, like, one of my songs that I would put on a playlist by them is Bullet the Blue Sky. I really like that song. It's really good. But I don't really like a lot of U2. Maybe I like I Will Follow. That's a good song.
Yeah, you were around in that generation of U2.
Yeah, I was around in the 80s. You're right.
What do you think? Your dad liked it?
Dad likes U2, so I've grown up kind of listening to them a lot. But unlike a lot of other bands that he likes that I also like, I don't really like U2. It doesn't help that South Park made fun of Bono a whole bunch. And then, like we've said previously, this album was forced on people, which really upset me as well, especially because I was really into digital privacy and stuff back then. So, for someone
now
to just...
doesn't care.
Well, yeah, now it's hard to care. But for someone to just put something on your device back then, I said it was a big deal in high school, but sorry, post-secondary, because I was 24 at the time. It was annoying, and I really didn't like it. And... now that I've had to listen to this album in particular, I can understand why I didn't like this album very much. I find their hits are okay. I don't think there's nothing wrong with this band. You know, anyone who likes them, fine, I get it. But to me, it is very much like the epitome of like soft rock, mainstream, radio friendly play.
It's aggressively middle of the road in that some of it tries to sound inspirational, but it comes out really not saying anything.
So I don't know if you've noticed anything about all the records I've picked. I listen to a lot of weird stuff or like different or interesting, whether that's in a good way or a bad way, because I don't typically like radio friendly play. It's kind of boring. When I chose Skin Shape, even though that was like super radio friendly and kind of chill, I even found that to be more interesting than I found this album.
Skin Shape is nothing like this at all.
No, not at all. It's very different. Episode, yeah. Oh yeah, it's very different. I'm just saying it was described as like radio friendly or like whatever. So yeah,
radio friendly in the way it had no bad vibes. Totally. Or words.
Yeah, Absolutely.
Yeah, this is definitely like new U2. They definitely were, I wouldn't say punk, but they were punk-y in the way that they viewed the world and politics and things like that. And then they kind of smoothed out. And like, obviously they still care about politics. This album has a lot of talk about the troubles in Ireland back in the 80s, the 60s to 80s or whatever it was.
60s, 90s? Like 60s to early 90s, yeah.
Yeah, it went on for a pretty long time.
And then, you know, it's just been quite a while since. Yeah. And like, I guess there just wasn't that much to talk about anymore. This album came out in 2014, I didn't mention, and is their 13th studio album. So like they have sung and talked about a lot of stuff before
this. It's the follow-up to an album that also went nowhere on the charts. Their previous album sold 5 million copies, which is considered very low.
For them, yeah.
Mm. So this was a follow-up to that, but it took so long to record.
Yeah, it took another 5 years.
Yeah, because they were doing the U2 360 tour, which was kind of neat. That was the one where they were on the stage in the round.
My mom saw that one as well.
Yeah, that was innovative. They did a whole documentary on it. It's sort of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and 5 years for them is a long time. They were releasing albums like every year, couple of years,
mm-hmm.
all the way up until like 2000. Then it was like 4 years, 4 years, 5 years.
This album is produced to death too. It's one of those albums that has like five different producers on it.
Mm.
One of the guys' name is Teddy, and not into that. Not into the anybody named Teddy.
There's nothing wrong with the name. Don't name shame people.
No, I'm going to. The only good Teddy is Teddy Roosevelt. So.
Yeah, well,
that's gonna be inflammatory. I bet we're getting tweets about that. Final verdict.
Yeah, Teddy Roosevelt's gonna tweet right at us from the grave.
How do you feel about Vinyl Verdict? Yeah, this is not the one I'd pick. If I were to pick a U2 album for a reason other than the fact that you own this and I think the history of the album is interesting, it would be Joshua Tree for sure. But why don't we give this one last listen and get right into it.
Mm-hmm. I woke up.
Miracle of Joey Ramone. Well, the miracle of Joey Ramone.
Yeah.
About Joey Ramone.
It doesn't mention Joey Ramone.
No. My first note is, Bono, you get Joey Ramone out of your mouth.
But, yeah, because he saw him live and was inspired by his singing.
So they asked one of the surviving Ramones what they thought of this song.
No way.
They thought it was very good. But he said, I'm perplexed why he never mentions Joey by name.
Apparently, so Bono really liked Joey Ramone. He saw him live, and it inspired him to be like not afraid of his singing.
Sure, because Joey Ramone sucks. Yeah, but sure. Their songs are great.
But apparently, Joey Ramone really liked U2.
Interesting.
Right before he died, he was listening to U2. He was dying of lymphoma or whatever it was, and died listening to U2.
Most of the Ramones are dead now. It's a shame.
Mm. Yeah,
I like this song. I think it's one of the stronger ones in the album.
Yeah.
I actually prefer, they have a deluxe version that has some alt versions, and there's a busker version of this song that I prefer a lot more. Like,
really?
It's acoustic guitar and some other alternate instruments.
Okay. Yeah.
Sounds really, really good. This one's still fun, though.
It's got fuzzy guitar.
Yeah, I wrote that, too. I like the fuzzy guitar.
Very crunchy.
This one is okay. I think it's got a catchy chorus. It gets pretty repetitive, though.
Mm.
And so it got kind of
boring. It's a very anthemic
fast
song, like that anthemic pop music that was popular in the early 2010s.
Yeah.
The only thing I'll say is that neither U2 or the Ramones were culturally relevant in 2014.
No, not at all.
No.
So referencing the Ramones, but not actually referencing them because you don't actually mention them.
When did he write the song and when did he see the Ramones?
Yeah. Well,
the Ramones was when
he
was like a youth teen. Yeah.
Okay. So then why write it now? Like, it just seems so weird.
You've been making 14 albums, I mean, eventually you're going
to
be
calling. There's a lot of nostalgia on this album. There's a lot of thinking back.
A lot of talk about like his family, his upbringing, stuff like that. Okay. So I think we'll talk about the album cover, but it's all kind of related to this innocence. It's Songs of Innocence.
Wow.
Think about it.
Next album is called something else. Songs of Something,
Surrender.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Songs of Experience and then Surrender. Surrender is actually a compilation. And I had mentioned I was going to want to choose it as a best of best ofs because it's all alternate versions of their hit songs.
Oh, neat.
I don't know about Songs of Experience, though. I don't know if it's an actual album or not, but this one song is good. I like the pacing. It's a lot of fun. The chorus feels like a more classic, like Vertigo. Like yeah. It has that kind of catchy, energetic feeling that really captures U2 in that this modern era. But I can see how you think it's repetitive. I think it's fun just to put on and put in the background.
It was inoffensive. And if I can say anything about this record is that
the whole album is inoffensive. The whole album
is very inoffensive.
Yes. Yeah. Some are too inoffensive. Up next is Every Breaking Wave.
It's a slow one.
It's fine enough.
It's a slow one after the fast one.
This sounds like every other British soft rock song from around this time. I don't know how else
it sounds like a Coldplay song.
Yeah, I put that this is bland pop rock.
Right?
The lyrics are fine. The instrumentation is fine. But none of it actually amounts to anything memorable. And it even ends in a fade out. I'm like, wow, this is just fully bland.
The riff is fine.
It's all okay.
It just trots along.
The only thing I know about it is that it was originally recorded for their previous album and not released.
Yeah.
It was, I believe it was cut from the album before. And then Chris Martin from Coldplay said it needed some more time.
He's like, I want that song.
I wrote that Bono's an okay singer at this point. You know, like he's fine.
I like his voice. I think it's unique enough, but not like grating or like too attention grabbing. It's a very interesting balance.
I don't even think it sounds unique. I think it sounds like every other, like, I don't know.
Don't say British, he's Irish.
Yeah, but it's just, I don't know. He does not sound unique to me.
I think that if you played a song, a bevy of songs, I'd be able to pick up Bono's voice.
Maybe.
Sure. But I could pick up Bono's voice, sure.
Next song is California, There Is No End to Love.
There is
this
no
is
end.
Just a song about how much they love California.
Yeah.
Like, literally just, like, they love California.
The intro to this song is the worst cover of Barbara Ann.
Dude, I know.
I've ever heard.
The beginning made me wish that this was Barbara Ann by the Beach Boys. And then it just didn't do that at all.
Apparently, the song is an ode to how he likes the Beach Boys by destroying them.
Okay. I don't really hate the lyrics otherwise. They're not bad.
The song is sort of like someone who read a brochure about a resort in California writing about the whole state.
I think it's probably because they're trying to capture their first time in California.
Sure.
Which probably was like a lot of just going to those places and being overwhelmed by.
It's like, wow, look at that beautiful sunset. And the
sunsets. Yeah.
You ever been to Bakersfield?
No. Nope.
Bakersfield, California sucks. Sorry if you're from Bakersfield.
I have to say, I also love California. Maybe that's why I defend it a little bit. Love California. I used to go down like once or twice a year.
Really?
I'll even be down in January.
Do you like the Blink 182 album, California?
I don't think so. I've never really listened to a full Blink 182 album from start to finish.
It sucks.
I like the little guitar solo near the end. It's not bad. Yeah. It's not like amazing, but it's not bad.
There is no end to love, but there is an end to this song. There's actually.
Sure. Yeah, I like the break around 250 that has the weird ethereal vocals and that little guitar solo. It's a solid end of the song, but it is another aggressively bland song.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want a good song about California, listen to any song by the Beach Boys. Any song.
Maybe.
Literally. California Girls, great song.
Katy Perry, Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
Next song is Song for Someone.
It's about his wife.
I really like this song. This is another one where I actually prefer the alt version on the deluxe version of the album, but I really like this song.
He calls his wife ugly, though. Like, the second line is like, you don't have a face that's, you know, like...
I think it's more like you're not worried about beauty standards. Well, not like... Because, like, if you look at somebody who's so focused on beauty standards, they might have done surgeries or done all this kind of stuff. I didn't take it as you're ugly.
I'll tell you this. Even if I was dating someone who didn't care about beauty standards or whatever, I'd never write this line about them.
Also, at this point, they've been married for, like, 40 years.
I get it. But I don't know. I thought this was, like, another kind of boring guitar solo near the end with some vocalizing. I actually don't like Bono's voice on this one very much. I kind of like the light guitar at the start. It sounds nice. I wrote that this is like bland Radiohead, and I don't like Radiohead.
It references
what? What are you on about? This is like bland Radiohead.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jamie. I can't let him just say that with dead air and let that land with somebody. What does that even mean?
Feels like, I don't know. This feels like bland Radiohead.
In what way? The like lyrics, the music? Like, what about this?
All of it. This, like, reminds me of if Radiohead was just, like, really boring.
What are you on about?
I understand what he's trying to say. He's trying to say this sounds like Radiohead if Radiohead was bad.
He just can't name any other British band than Radiohead.
It sounds like Coldplay. Bad Rolling Stones. Sounds like the Bee Gees.
Yeah, it's like, what?
Okay. I don't know. I Googled it after, and there's been a few people that, like, they compare Radiohead to U2 a bunch. Like, it's on their forums and stuff. I don't know. I'm not the only person who's ever thought
this. It sounds like a bad Oasis album. Okay. I don't know. Like,
First of all, Irish, not British. Second of all, wrong anyways. Yeah.
The song references the first album he gave his wife, which was The Man Machine by Kraftwerk, which is a banger.
Hmm. When Bono comes on the podcast, he could choose that album.
Yeah, when we have Bono on, well, I'll bust out my Kraftwerk. Fun.
I think it's a cute love song. I think the lyrics are strong in this, and the verses are pretty dynamic, with Bono even hitting some high notes in the second verse before hitting into the chorus. And even though the song is almost 4 minutes long, it feels shorter to me because I jam out and sing every time. I like the song a lot.
It's okay.
And it does not remind me of Radiohead at all.
That's fine.
Next is Iris, Hold Me Close, a song about Bono's mother passed away when he was 14. It is a scary story. They were at his grandfather's funeral, her mom, she has an aneurysm and dies. It's crazy.
Yeah, he lost his mom and his grandfather in like the same week.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. That is so scary. There's a lot of imagery and call-outs, even though she's been gone for so long, it still feels like she's with him. And I love the line, Iris says that'll be the death of her. It was not me. It's just so haunting, again, mm-hmm. to be like, this acceptance of I had nothing to do with it or whatever. Because when you're 14, like, how do you even come to terms with the fact that you've lost your mom in that way?
Yeah, it's awful. As for the music, it starts off like a U2 song.
Yes.
And then it continues being a U2 song because The Edge is doing that guitar thing he does, like, on the Where the Streets Have No Name.
He sure does.
Yeah, he just does that the whole song.
I don't even know how to describe it, but I wrote the same thing. I wish it changed up the song a bit because it feels like a standard U2 pop song, but it barely lands on the side of enjoyable versus bland or boring.
Yeah.
But they do that, like, yeah, flicking guitar thing. It's like that chimey
guitar thing, yeah.
I thought Bono sounded like he was doing a bad David Bowie impression.
He is just naming people. You are just naming people.
I really like the bass in the background. It's fast and steady. But I did not like this song. I don't like the woo woo vocalizing. I thought the chorus was just really inoffensive and something people can sing along to, but I don't know. It's not for me. The bridge is okay, but it doesn't really change anything enough. And then it kind of like builds up a swell, but then it doesn't really crash or anything. It's just like a rising tide and it doesn't go anywhere. I don't know. I didn't like this one either.
That's fine. Up next, Volcano. I don't really have any notes. I just said totally fine.
You don't want to know, Volcano. Something in you wants to blow. This might be one of the worst lines in music I have ever heard.
Yep. It's got a nice bass line and punchy drums. And, you know, hey, if you weren't sure that this was rock, they really let you know that, yes, you and I are totally rock and roll. We are rock and roll. This is rock and roll. The guitar in the chorus is kind of cool, but it just sounds like a slow kind of tremolo effect. I don't know. I don't like the backing vocals or the effect on his voice near the end during the rock and roll part.
This is dad rock.
Some people think this song is about not letting grief overtake you.
Cool.
I didn't get that from that.
Not me either.
Yeah, I don't have, I literally have no other notes, and I guess it's fine.
It's so okay.
It's totally fine.
Yeah.
Up next is Raised by Wolves. These two titles back to back, pretty cringy.
Oh, yeah.
Raised by Wolves, I think, is a better song. Like, I actually think it is quite good, but to follow up Volcano,
quite good.
Yes. Okay. So, mostly because I think the lyrics are quite good.
Oh, okay.
It's telling a story about the car bombings that took place in Dublin and Monaghan.
I like that how it mentioned the car's license plate.
Sure.
Yeah, he numbers.
Yeah, he numbers the number plate.
That was the stolen car that was full of ammonium nitrate.
Yeah, you know it. I like how it talks about how it affected the people that witnessed the attacks as well, instead of just the people who are lost. Because obviously the people who are lost, that's awful. But so many people had their lives dramatically affected, and there's even allusions to people turning to drugs after not being able to cope with the stuff that they witnessed. Which I think is pretty powerful.
So a group claimed responsibility for it, but it was never proven that they actually did it. So the worst part about the whole thing is that nobody actually has any closure from it because they don't actually know who did it.
Yeah. I like the I don't believe anymore refrain. I think the chorus is powerful. You know, I think it's a good song about a tragic event that led to 33 people losing their lives and many others affected by losing those people or having to witness it.
You know what's a better song about Tragic Event. Sunday Bloody Sunday.
We can have multiple songs that are decent about tragic events. Sunday Bloody Sunday is 1,000% better than this.
Yeah, this is 1,000%. Yeah, I just wanted you to tell me it was a better song. That's, yeah, that's all I wanted.
That's like my problem with this whole album is none of it's bad. Like, none of this is terrible. None of this is bad. They're decent musicians. I think Bono's an okay singer. It's just, I guarantee you, literally every song here, you can find like a better thing that tells the story better or is more interesting to listen to or whatever. Like, I don't hate the instrumentation on this or the chorus or the quick little guitar riff that kind of signals it in when it goes in. I think the chorus is fun to sing along to, but I don't know. The rest of it's just kind of bland and boring.
Fair. Up next is Cedarwood Road, where Bono grew up.
I like the guitar on this one. I actually thought, I wrote, dang, finally some cool guitar.
Mm-hmm. It's too long, though. Like, 4.5 minutes.
They're all, like, 4.5, 5 minutes,
though.
This one
feels long. Mm. Like, this one, yes. I notably was like, woof, okay, can we go?
The guitar is fine, though.
Yeah, this one kind of sounds like a punchy blues song a little bit. And then Bono starts singing and everything relaxes so he can be front and center.
Yeah, wherever he grew up in that time was rough. The first line is, I was running down the road, the fear was all I knew. Like, clearly Ireland in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, as we know, was very challenging.
Well, Northern Ireland. Southern Ireland was okay.
No.
Well, just, sorry, the Republic of Ireland. Southern Ireland is
rough now.
I don't know if that's true, actually.
If we have any Irish listeners, let us know. You know there's a Q&A feature on Spotify. You can send us messages.
Andrew listens to our podcast now.
He does not. He'll listen to this episode, though.
No, he does.
He does not. But he'll listen to this episode.
He listens all the time.
He does not. He'll listen to this episode. Oh, okay. yeah, what do you think, Jamie, otherwise?
It's fine. The guitar on it is good. It is overly long.
Mm-hmm. Up next, Sleep Like a Baby Tonight, a song about child abuse that happens in the Catholic Church. A heavy topic, but a very real topic.
Jesus, it's, sorry, literally, it starts off like a Depeche Mode song.
So I really like the pulsing sense.
Yeah.
This was one of the only songs I actually kind of liked on the album.
It's more different than all the other ones.
Yeah.
It is.
But it is a very of its time, I think.
I don't know.
Original time, maybe, but yeah, not maybe. 2014.
I didn't feel like it was a 2014 song. The guitar solo near the end is pretty simple and boring, but at least it's like kind of tasteful. Like it fits that, fits the song.
Yeah, I like the chorus. I don't think I'd ever listen to the song, though, because no matter how good a song is, and I do think it's good, I don't want to listen to a song about child abuse and like unaliving yourself. And I don't know, just tough subjects are not something I want to pop up in a playlist while I'm like driving down this to go to the grocery store. Like, oh yeah, the Catholic Church. Like,
thank you, Sinead O'Connor.
Yeah.
Sure. I don't mind the fade out in this song. I feel like it kind of suits the subject just to like stew in it for an ending. I think I probably still would have preferred a long outro that crashes out, but that's just personal preference. This is Where You Can Reach Me Now. A song about seeing the Clash for the first time.
It's got a spooky sounding organ at the beginning.
Is there a theremin? I wasn't sure if it was an organ or a theremin.
I don't know. I didn't look that up.
I wrote, I like the spooky theremin, or at least whatever sounds like one.
Yeah. This song is apparently dedicated to Joe Strummer of The Clash. Like the first track, it does not mention him at all.
Yeah, that's cool. I like The Clash.
I've never listened to The Clash or The Ramones, but I can sense them in these songs, let me tell you. This is a pretty bland song. Nothing special. Aggressively fun.
That's not the way The Clash is, though.
No.
They're not
playing. Maybe not to you.
I thought the ending dragged on for like way too long on this one.
Yeah. Lock the taskbar.
Up next, the final song on the regular release of the album, The Troubles, featuring Licky Lee.
She's Swedish.
Oh, cool. I like the tone switch up here. I think Licky Lee is a great artist, and her voice accents Bono super well.
She's got that indie singer voice.
Yeah, but I like it.
Kinda. I don't know. I could hear her. I thought the chorus was nice with her, with the backup singer.
Mm-hmm. The harmonizing they do. I'm guessing it's just chorus effects with just her, but I really enjoy that.
Yeah, it was nice. Yeah.
It's titled like it's about the troubles in Ireland.
It is about the troubles in Ireland.
It's about domestic violence.
I don't think so. I think it's about the troubles.
No.
You are right. It's about domestic violence. Because actually, I wrote a note here saying it's weird that they reference. This is the only song that references the Troubles directly in all of U2's history.
Mm.
And then, they chose something about domestic violence.
Yeah.
I do find that very odd.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah. I think the production value is really high here.
Yeah.
I like the bass. I like the drum lines. The strings are a great touch. And again, the harmonizing is really good. I will definitely be listening to this song again. I enjoy it quite a lot. Even though it is a tough subject.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. It's not as tough a subject as abusing children.
It's not as blunt.
Yeah, it's just not as overt. You're right, yeah. It is fine.
Yeah.
It is an end to an album.
Ploof, any other thoughts on that song?
I thought it was kind of overproduced, to be honest. I don't know. I didn't feel like it. Like, sure. I liked the backup singer quite a bit. But I don't know. It feels like they're trying too hard at the very end of the album. Like, either do the whole album like this or don't do the one last song kind of like this. I don't know. It just felt a little out of place.
Yeah, with the subject matter, I think I would have liked if they took a darker electronica tone to it instead of, like, going back to their old stuff and then kind of coming back and then being, I guess, Radiohead. I don't agree, but I mean, I don't know. It's just like they kind of do go all over the place. But there is one more song called The Crystal Ballroom, which is the 12-inch exclusive. So it's only on the vinyl or the Japanese release, I believe.
Okay.
Which these two didn't listen to because they didn't have the vinyl. But I think it's an interesting song. I enjoy it. I don't know if it's a good U2 song, though, because it's very poppy. It feels like a late Franz Ferdinand, or like it feels of the time.
Yeah, we listened to it before the podcast. Or sorry, we listened to it today.
We listened to it in the one last listen.
Yeah. It's interesting. Also, it's interesting because that side of the album only has one track on it.
Yeah, and it plays at 45 speed versus the other side and the other disc, because it's two disc, play at 33.
Yeah.
Which I didn't even think was possible, but I guess is.
Yeah, I didn't think it was impossible.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like a club-like song. I don't mind it. Bono's voice kind of suits this dark electric tone that I, like said before, I would have preferred maybe more songs like this. But it has a long 2-minute outro. Like,
sure.
Two minutes of just like, whoa, meh. Like, just like little vocalizing. But then it changes up a bit. It's very odd. It's way too long because this is a like 5 or 7 minute song or something like that. It's extremely long.
Sweet.
I don't know why it has to be. It's on its own side, though. So if you don't want to listen to it, don't. You don't have to worry about it coming on at the end, which is nice. But. Yeah, let's talk about the album itself.
Yeah, let's take a look at it.
Please explain the album cover.
The album cover is the drummer, Larry Mullen Jr., hugging he's shirtless, by the way, hugging his shirtless son.
Okay.
Okay, sure.
To, again, visualize holding on to your innocence.
I still think it's weird.
It is odd. And again, imagine a guy from the South with an iPhone having this show up, these two shirtless guys hugging... Yeah. Hugging low too, like his head is like right above his like navel. Pubic bone. It's right above his belt, kind of thing. I think it makes sense with the ideas shown in this album. It is just a lot to look at if you're not into that.
And I get that it's his son, and that makes it better. But
does it
coming from
again, you're holding on to your innocence.
Zero context. It's like an older dude shirtless.
Hugging a younger dude,
shirtless.
An 18-year-old man.
Like, and it looks like, I don't know, very odd. And I don't like it. I'm not homophobic.
Larry Mullen Jr., though, like, he's got a haircut you could set a watch to.
Yes. On the inside, we have a picture of the band in the center. Very standard rock band thing to do.
The edges look like the edge for at least 20 years.
The edge looks good. I'll give him that. He looks chiseled.
Does
still.
Not age.
He looks kind of like... He looks like he'd be a Nickelback.
Look at this photo.
And I mean that in the most direct way possible. He looks like he's in the band Nickelback. On the back, we have just black with the song title split up by side, which is nice.
None more black.
I like the font. It's just like Times New Roman. But it is just like a black cover. Like the front picture is black and white with black around them. The back is just black. The inside photo is black with a black and white for the band. So my fingerprints are already all over it.
Yeah.
But I have to say, having this actual record, I like the photo. Like it's a glossy photo. It looks really good. The black looks really black.
Yeah, the jacket is nicely glossy.
Yeah, it's very nice. On the inside, the sleeves for the records have the lyrics for the songs. And the records themselves are white, bone white, very milky white. It is a little bit of a dirty pressing. Like, there is a little bit of, like, black marking on the inner ring.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Which is interesting. Also to note, though it is Songs of Innocence on the edge of the record, cover, the album cover, and on the label on the records, it's Sun Space GS of Innocence. Maybe, again, playing to this whole, younger self thing.
I never noticed that.
And then on the other jacket, it again has, no, it doesn't have any lyrics. It has the production notes, so who did what on each song, as well as flashbacks for Songs of Innocence, where there's just like a little bit of story. It has some information about the person from the song about the car bombings and how they had turned to painkillers, information about his mom passing, Bono's mom passing away, seeing the Joy Ramone live, stuff like that. So it's got information about some of the stories being told in this album, which is pretty neat. And then again, just more production notes, a lot of thank yous, a lot of thank yous on the other side as well. Even a shout out to Samantha Farrell, who did catering.
Cool.
Shout out to her.
Yeah. Thanks for feeding them.
So I like the record package. I'd say this is kind of like what I would like the standard for a record to be. Like,
yeah,
that's it pretty much is just the record, but I like these little bit of notes. That little bit of a story and stuff like that kind of adds to the enjoyment of the record. If you really liked it, being able to hear more of the stories behind the songs is pretty neat. But what do you guys think? What's your final verdict? Jamie, why don't you start us off?
I thought the album itself is too aggressively benign. It doesn't take any chances. It certainly sounds like a U2 album, but it doesn't sound like the kind of U2 album that I would want to listen to. But it's fine. It just doesn't do anything for me. And so in that sense, it's more like a 7 or like a 7.5 out of 13.
That's fine. Yeah.
It's
fine.
It's just fine. Yeah. But it's not bad. It's just okay. Speaking of just okay, it's Mr. Plouffe.
Yep. Jamie, you know, we've got a pretty similar score, I think, because I gave it a 6 out of 10.
Oh, that's about right.
I wrote the, it's not terrible. I can't call them bad. I think they're just boring and inoffensive. It sounds like soft rock from the late 90s or the early 2000s, and I just can't really stand it. I'd probably never listen to this again. I wouldn't choose any songs for a playlist. I 100% understand why there's a big following and why people like them. You know, I grew up listening to some of their stuff, I'm sure, and it was probably fine. I would probably even like a greatest hits album from U2 if it included their earlier stuff. But I don't know. I like a lot of like harder, weird stuff, and so this just is not for me. It's very middling, and it's so middling that I can't recommend it to anyone.
Mm-hmm. Like I said in the intro, this album is aggressively fine. It took a lot of undeserved flack because it ended up on people's devices. And I don't mean undeserved flack for putting on devices. I mean the album itself got pooped on because of the way it was delivered.
Yep.
Even Pitchfork's album, like their tagline, references the fact that it was put on people's devices.
4.6.
Which I don't think is fair. You shouldn't count on how it's delivered on how good the actual album is.
I didn't like it at all. And so even I wouldn't give it like a 4.6.
Album sales don't count that you got it for free on your iPhone. So
yes, this sales, is not the most sold album of all time.
No. So album sales didn't start counting until it had its wide public release.
Yeah. Which was a month later.
Yeah.
It was exclusive to the iTunes store. Anyways, I'm going to put this in the 11th spot below Prozac's Hot Show and above Ballads Won by Joji because it is just fine. You know, it's the mid spot because it's not bad. There's not a whole lot that I actively disliked. There's not a whole lot that I actively liked. So it's just in the middle. And like Prozac, I assume this will stay around the middle through this whole thing because, yeah, I didn't. There's no point where I'm going to be like, I want to get up and turn this off.
Yeah.
But there's no point where I want to get up and put it on. It's just going to be on. And, you know, funnily enough, like Plouffe had said, just listen to a best of U2.
Yeah.
U2's hits are really, really good. Everything else is fine. And, like, the risk of listening to an album is that maybe you'll just think a song is fine, but I don't know. Just save your time and listen to a best of.
Yeah.
But next week, maybe we're listening to a great album.
We are.
What did you pick, Jamie?
Jamie, what did you pick?
We're listening to Ray Charles' Modern Sounds in Country and Western music.
All right. Sure.
I've never listened to Ray Charles. That title scares me a little bit, but I'm excited.
It's country and Western, baby.
I am not excited.
We haven't listened to a country. I thought
Ray Charles
Western
is like jazz.
Yeah, jazz piano blues stuff.
Is it a country album?
Who knows? It's modern.
It's a modern
country and Western.
On Vinyl Verdict.
Goodbye.
Bye.